Welcome to the Toxin Free-ish podcast. As always, I'm your host, Wendy, an environmental toxins attorney turned clean living coach. And today is going to be different than really any podcast episode that I have put out in the past. I typically focus on toxin-free topics, things that you ask me, things that you want to learn more about. But we're going to turn that on its head today, and I'm going to share with you me being interviewed by a friend of mine who has her own podcast. This interview, while we do touch on why I do toxins regulation, how I got into my career, what my backstory is, she actually pulled some fun stories from my life that really give, I think, my audience an opportunity to see a little bit behind the scenes of what Wendy is like unplugged. I shared some things that I've actually never really shared before. And I had a lot of people reach out to me and say, hey, I heard you on the Unbranded podcast. It was really refreshing. It was really nice to hear more of a personal side of you and to hear more of your story because it goes to your heart. It goes to why you are so passionate about holistic health and toxin-free living. And it really felt like I can connect to you now. I can connect to you better. And so after hearing a lot of that feedback, I decided, you know, I'm just going to share that interview. I'm going to share that interview with all of you who listen to me week after week after week. And I'm going to allow you in and let you get to know me a little bit better. Be warned. I say a lot of bad words in this interview, so if you have kids with you, maybe not the best time to listen to it, but here we go.
Hey, Wendy.
Hey, girl.
Or any of Wendy's listeners that might be here, this is going to be a different side of Wendy, a side of Wendy that we don't really see in her podcast for sure, because that's very educational and science heavy, and not very often on her Instagram. Because this is a fun and laid back podcast. It's called Unbranded because I don't know what the fuck we're talking about ever. I don't have a theme. I just like to talk, to have interesting conversations with interesting people. So this is going to be a big deal for your followers. How are you feeling being out of your comfort zone in this way?
I'm a little out of my comfort zone. That's how I'm feeling. I'm feeling a little, I really protect my personal space online. But when you sent the questions over, I was like, oh, this isn't a toxin-free-ish talk. This is a, who's Wendy?
Yeah.
It'll be good for me.
I tried to sprinkle in a couple of toxin-free questions so that you do have some footing. But no, I want to know about you. Let's just start off. We'll keep it easy. Tell me about your situation right now. What's the weather outside? What's life like? What's going on in your house? What time did you wake up? How are you feeling?
I woke up so early because you wanted a 7 a.m. podcast.
Let the record show, Wendy has canceled the podcast on me 4 to 5 times in the last few months.
Fair. Yeah, I'm an early riser. I live in the woods on a lake in Virginia. And right now, if you were to walk into my living room, I have these massive, beautiful windows overlooking the lake. And they are currently covered in condensation because it's so fucking humid outside that nobody wants to go outside. Luckily, there's water down there. And after this podcast episode, I will go jump in the lake and go swim and enjoy it. But it's freaking this humidity. I'm an Arizona girl. I grew up in Arizona. I'm a lizard. I like the dry heat. This is the part of living in Virginia I'm not a big fan of.
Are you going to be able to jump in the lake and swim until your body wears out?
Yeah.
Like talking about, that'll be really good for you. So
my dog trailing behind me. He swims.
Oh my God.
He follows me.
Yeah. Axel has a beard. Let's talk about how we met. We met for the first time physically in Ecuador. We both earned a Young Living trip, which we will talk about later, to Young Living's farm, Finca Botanica, in Ecuador. And we got to stay on the farm, on the spa, and we shared a room together.
We were roommates, bunkmates.
Yeah, what a way to get to know someone when you have to share a room and you have to announce as soon as you come in, all right, what's the poop schedule? Just get it out of the way.
We legit had that conversation because it's 3 bunks. It was me, you, and Soshana, and then a bathroom that's like right there. We're like, it's like camping style. So yeah,
throughout the door. The door didn't really close. So every time you're sitting on the toilet, you're staring at whoever's sitting on the bed. So I was a last minute addition. I got the invite a couple of weeks before the actual trip. It was quite the whirlwind. And luckily, our mutual friend Annie was reached out to you or reached out to Soshana and said, hey, Susie needs a spot and she can't room with randoms. So can she room with you?
No randoms for Susie.
I think you both stalked me and you were like, she's legit.
To be fair, Annie vouched for you.
That says a lot. We got into a group chat and I was like, okay, these girls are cool. And then I felt like we were friends before we got there. And then when we were in Ecuador, then we really became really good friends. And I think it was love at first sight. I think we just bonded. We just were like this, I think.
You're the yin to my yang. You are like the piece of me, the part of me that's under there and wants to come out. But you're just like all of that all the time. And it's electric. I love it. You make me better. It was for sure love at first sight. I was like, oh, this girl and I, we're going to be such good friends. And we are.
I didn't know that you were an environmental toxins attorney for the first few days. And once I heard that, I'm like, whoa, that's so cool. That's so specific. And also, that's so badass. And I never would have thought that of you, not because you're not an incredibly intelligent woman, but we all have these stereotypes of what different professions are. And you did not fit that. And now when I hear you talk about toxins and stuff, I'm like, oh, she's got this on lock. It totally makes sense. But at the time, I didn't know you like that. Your listeners right now know you like that. But I just knew
they
you
only know me like that.
Yeah, I just knew you as someone who was getting a colonic with me and talking to literally everyone that you could find and was like, kept losing her black shirt in our bedroom and was like a little frazzle dazzle. Have you always wanted to be an attorney? How did that journey go?
So you're so funny. I get this a lot. I guess we'll start there. I not only am very ADHD, I'm also a Gemini. And there are two very distinct sides to my personality. And it's funny because when people know me at work and only at work, and then they spend time with me outside of work, they're very confused. Wait a minute, who's this girl? Because I do have that ADHD need to perform side of me, that perfectionism, that very serious, very single-minded, intelligent. I have that in my work professional side. And then the other piece of me, the Gemini, is I'm very easygoing and I don't like making decisions. And I just want somebody to tell me what to do. And I just want to like have fun and relax and be chill. And those two things don't really match. And so people do get very confused by it. But I have always wanted to be a lawyer, always, from a very young age. I grew up in a family full of teachers and lawyers. And so I had an older cousin that I looked up to. I had an uncle who was a judge that I looked up to. And I was also this really sensitive kid that felt a deep need to right wrongs. Like I'm highly empathetic. And so I would watch the news and something bad would be on the news. And my instinct was, I need to fix that. That's wrong. I need to make it right. And so I've always had this need to seek out justice. Like there needs to be a right for this wrong, and I need to be a part of it. And I always felt no one would take me seriously. And I'm a blonde. I was like a toe-headed blonde girl, short. Like I'm not an atypical, we should listen to this girl. And so I remember thinking at a very young age, if I had a law degree, people would listen to me. And I think I got that from watching my cousin, who was a very high-powered professional, respected attorney, my uncle, who was a judge. And I just thought, if I had that education, then my intelligence and my opinions would matter. And so that was all I had. That was my single thought, like my whole life, my whole childhood. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to get a bunch of degrees. I'm going to go to law school and people are going to listen to me and I'm going to change the world. So that was my headspace, which I guess is weird for a kid, but that was just always what I wanted to do. And
it wasn't always environmental. I wanted to work with veterans. I had all of these other things. I wanted to do international law. I majored in Russian language. I went and studied abroad in Russia. I was going to do international diplomacy. I was going to save the world. Foreign policy, that was where I was headed. And that's not where I ended up. All that changed.
How did environmental toxins come into the picture?
It's a funny story. I don't think I've ever told the story anywhere. My friends know, obviously, but I was married to a Marine when I was in law school, and he deployed and fought in the war. The Marines were deploying. People were dying. It was a very difficult time for our country, but also for military spouses, especially. And I was really impacted and affected by all of it. And I ended up getting a presidential volunteer award for some volunteer work I was doing with the Marines. I got to meet President Bush. He personally gave me an award himself. And I was committed to working with veterans. I was like, this is it. This is my calling. There were a lot of things that were very wrong about how they were being treated and their ability to get disability. There were a lot of guys that had traumatic brain injuries that were being ignored and pushed out and not given resources. And so I was doing volunteer work in that aspect. And I was like, this is it. This is my calling. This is what I'm going to do. And I had an internship my last year of law school. And that's like the big deal in law school. It's like wherever you do your last year's internship is typically where that would move into a job off after law school. And I was going back to Arizona, where I'm from. I had a huge opportunity and I was super excited. And 2 weeks before my internship was supposed to start, that VA office closed. And they called me and they were like, we're so sorry. We're moving. Like, we're literally closing our doors. They like consolidated a bunch of VA areas. And so I had nothing. And so I had to go to my lead professor at law school and say, we're supposed to start in 2 weeks and I don't have my internship. And it was part of my graduation requirement. Like, it was a whole semester of, instead of me going to class, I had to go to this internship. And I had really good grades. I was top of my class. And my professor said, I know somebody in the Navy. Would you want to go do work for the military? And I was like, duh, I'm married to a Marine. This is really impactful. It's not VA work, but it's still within the same realm. And so I went and met with the Navy and we hit it off right away. And I jumped into the Office of General Counsel office as an intern, got to work with the JAGs and got to work with civilian lawyers. And they put me to work working on environmental litigation. Because that was the work that they were working on. It was sonar litigation. It was fascinating. I learned a lot about litigation in my time there. And then after graduation, they kept me on while I worked and took the bar and passed the bar. And I fell in love with the world of environmental within the context of the military. So that became a new passion of mine, because people don't realize, especially the Navy in California, they own so much of the coastline. And as everybody builds houses and build commercial buildings, all of these endangered species and all of this habitat that gets destroyed, they all migrate onto military lands because our military lands are untouched. We train on lands that we don't have buildings. We have wetlands. We have sand dunes. We have endangered species living on islands that we own off the coast of California. We have biologists on our staff. We have marine biologists on our staff. We have botanists. We work with universities. Our biodiversity on our military properties nobody does what the military does. And that story doesn't get told. And yeah, it became a new passion of mine. And when I was given the opportunity to stay on with them and do some other work, I jumped at it. Yeah, that was my entry point away from working with veterans and into the environmental.
I'm fascinated because you are still so passionate about this and it's been so long.
Yeah.
And something I wanted to point out, I was writing down, is when you were wanting to do international diplomacy, you said, I wanted to change the world and here I am. And so I wanted to edify you because you are changing the world just in a different way. You are changing the world through changing families, which is one of the most impactful ways to change the world. moving from environmental stuff, you weren't even in environmental toxins. You were doing like environmental stuff within. It all just morphed. And now your main, you still do that. I think you're focusing on water.
Yeah, right? I have a lot of water stuff going on, right? Yeah. Water ride, water policy. You listen when I talk to you about my job sometimes.
I know. I do forget some things, but I do remember a lot of things. You have transitioned now in your public facing persona to personal toxins and toxins in our homes, toxins that we put in our bodies, toxins that are around us, and how we can have a more active role in what enters our home and what enters our bodies as we live in this toxic world. Can you tell me, like, when it comes to families, what are some misconceptions that people have about toxins that are in their homes? And what is the most important thing consumers should be aware of?
Yeah, I think I came to this realization in the work that I was doing a lot of like water quality, drinking water, air quality, what we call cleanup, which is where if you have like contaminated soil and you have to clean it up before you can sell it so that private houses can be built on it. I remember waking up one day and being like, wait a minute, the things that we are trying to clean up in this dirty, contaminated soil, that's against the law. We can't sell this property to somebody private and let them build a house on it because it's contaminated. And it's contaminated with things that are literally in my fucking face wash. Like, are being added. I'm putting it on my thing. I distinctly remember that realization, that moment where I was like, oh my God, this is wild. And I do think taking that as a starting point is that the biggest misconception is that somebody's doing something about it. Somebody is actually giving a shit and telling companies, here's a list of ingredients that we know are bad for our health. You're not allowed to use them. That is completely not true, not even a little bit, especially here in the United States. And the other misconception is that just a little bit is fine. And that is a real old school way of thinking. It used to be the dose is the poison, right? Like a high amount of a carcinogen that caused cancer is bad. But if it's just a little bit, it's fine. And we now know, if somebody were to just be behind a decade, they wouldn't even know this. But we now know low levels of exposure over time is equally as significant, if not more significant, to our health. And so I don't like hearing that on the internet for people that are just like, it's just a little bit, because it's just a little bit every day, all the time, in everything. And we have some really serious health issues that are being caused by not just our toxic world, which our environment is something most people can't do much about, but we can control what's coming into our house. I would say that those two things are the things that are the biggest misconceptions I hear, is that somebody's doing something about this and if a little bit is just okay.
It was not even that long ago. I think it was probably during my pregnancy when I was doing a lot of research on home births and the birthing industry that I realized nobody cares about me. As dire as that is, how many harmful things were in my home that I thought were safe and that I thought I was making good choices about because they're marketed as better and good. Until I met you. And then that's when I really realized, I was like, oh shit, I have to like undo my whole home. Which is not true. You don't have to do your whole home at one time. Something that I've learned since knowing you is small changes make big impacts. And those small changes allow your body to recalibrate itself, is what I always say, a little bit closer into its natural state to optimally work the way that it was intended to. It doesn't have to take completely throwing out everything in your house and swapping it with something clean. You'd be amazed with how simple it is to swap your good all-purpose house cleaner and what that'll do for your overall health I'm not a science-y person. I'm an English person. So I don't know about this stuff. I'm a Wendy in this situation where I'm like, I don't know. Just tell me what to do. People, the average person that's like Susie that has no idea about this stuff, doesn't know what they're doing, just needs to be told what to do. What are some red flags that I need to look out for in my products? I don't know how to, I know you're really good at reading ingredient labels. I don't know what any of it means. So what are some easy things to spot?
So I would say fragrance is number one. If you do nothing at all, if you know nothing and read no labels, and don't want to dive into understanding the difference between essential oils and botanicals and reading labels, just buy unscented everything. I'm fragrance free. And actually, unscented just means they can use chemicals to mask the scent. So fragrance free is what you want to look for. And that's like an easy step. It's funny, though, people really love things that smell good. You want to just take that step one step further, and there is some kind of scent in it. Just make sure it's a listed essential oil and it's actually listed on the ingredient label and there's not a separate fragrance added. And so that's like number one if people don't want to learn how to read labels. I love teaching people how to read labels. One day you're going to know how to read labels. Just go for the fragrance free and just really be careful that if you want a scent that is only coming from an essential oil, because fragrance is where a lot of these endocrine disruptors hide, these reproductive toxins. Most people don't realize, I think it's becoming more and more common knowledge that the word fragrance can be over 3,000 different ingredients. And there's solvents and there's preservatives and there's all of these things that hide in that word that aren't required to be put on the label. That's where all the bad stuff hides, where you can't look on a label and see it for yourself. And just that one thing makes a really big difference. And the other thing is just transparency. Can you read a label and are ingredients actually listed out, or are they just categories? Like sometimes companies will say, there's anionic surfactants. Which one? There's like hundreds. So if it's being very vague and there's not actual ingredients listed, that's always a red flag for me too.
Let me ask you a question. Would you love to know how to read a label without being super confused about what ingredients you should be avoiding and which ones are clean? If you said yes, listen up. This is for you. I remember being that person standing in aisles at Target trying to read labels. And back then, I had zero idea what I was looking for. I didn't know what a preservative was or an ethoxylated ingredient. It was all like reading a foreign language. But now that I'm a savvy label reader, I wanted to create a simple way to teach you how to read labels without being overwhelmed. That's why I created a resource I know you are going to love. It's a list of my top 25 toxins to avoid and my simple three-step hack for reading labels. It's not just any hack. It's the exact same method that I use every single day to review products and read labels. And it's the same process I teach all of my students. With these three steps and a little bit of practice, you'll be able to tell within 90 seconds if a product is clean or not. I personally believe that everyone should have this skill. You can't be fooled by greenwashing and fancy marketing when you know how to look for ingredients you want to avoid. So whether you're just starting out on this toxin-free journey or you're a seasoned pro, this information is so valuable. And here's the best part. It's completely free. Just head over to www.toxinstoavoid.com. That's www.toxinstoavoid.com. Grab your download and start reading labels like a pro today.
When it comes to fragrance, you also have a very personal story with getting rid of fragrance things. Can you share that with
me? Yes. And this is actually how I pivoted from environmental land use policy, like air, water, soil, to personal products. My daughter was born and was a redemption story. My son was a C-section that I've, you know, lots of trauma. That could be a whole episode in and of itself. And my daughter was an all-natural VBAC, vaginal birth after cesarean, no drugs, like zero intervention. I had a doctor that was so respectful of my bodily autonomy. It was beautiful. And after that perfect birth, she immediately had eczema. And when I say eczema, like head to toe, horrific, horrific eczema. And ended up having to cloth diaper her. She could not have a disposable diaper. And I didn't have the information or the education that I did back then on gut health and interventions and other things. And so I was just doing what the doctors told me to and using topical stuff, which is terrible, those topical steroids. And I moved to Italy. I took a job in Italy and went to an Italian pediatrician who was like, oh, are you using American products? And looked at me accusatory. And I was like, I was living overseas and I'm on a military base. We had access to American products. And so I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, yeah, throw them all away. Throw them all away, fragrance free. Here's a list of Italian products that you need to go buy into the grocery store and everything will be fine. And I was like, okay. But I did it. I like being told what to do in my personal life. So I did it. And yeah, it was wild. 6 weeks later, completely clear. No sign of eczema whatsoever. And then my husband at the time said to me, when was the last time you had a migraine? I suffered from migraines since I was 16. I lived on Excedrin, which is awful, by the way. Don't do what I did. I destroyed my gut health because of it. But I couldn't get through law school. I couldn't get through a job week. I couldn't get through at least 3 migraines a week, 2 to 3. On a good week, if I only had one, whew, that was a good week. And it had been 6 weeks and I had not a single migraine and they were gone. And so that was my pivot. That was my, oh, this is 2 things that were so significant in our life. My daughter's eczema and my migraines, they're gone just because we like switched our product. What the fuck is in these products? Like, you know, it was a journey. It took me time. There were steps in the journey that slowly got me to where I went. And when I got back to California, I was given the option. Like I could go back into the general counsel's office. I had that option. I could go back to doing like actual law, which is boring to a certain extent. Or I could go into lobbying. They offered me a policy opportunity lobbying in the environmental arena, which included consumer products and other environmental things. And I took it. So I pivoted. Still on my law degree, still licensed, but I pivoted to policy and lobbying. And that really became my path. And that's still what I really do today is lobbying and policy work. I'm not like a private lawyer who takes clients. I get a lot of people who message me and they're like, I've been poisoned. Can you represent me? I don't do that. I'm not that kind of lawyer. I don't do practice. I don't practice a lot in that sense. I do policy and lobbying. And yeah, I feel like most people who come into the health, clean living world, it's because they have a very serious personal experience with it. And so that was mine.
I hope anyone listening to this is taking this as an opportunity to think back and wonder how many of my daily discomforts aren't a part of my story, are the result of toxins that I'm living amongst. And I wonder how many of the problems that I've just accepted as a part of my life that I have to deal with that I actually don't have to deal with and I can take control over. And that's the message that I think you're really spreading to people is, again, giving them the opportunity to take control of their life experience and not settle for the discomforts and the suffering that come with living in a world where money is the boss and not health and well-being and quality of life. And I hope that the people listening to this podcast who have super painful periods or have migraines or have like general aches and pains or their kids are suffering with asthma can take a step and be like, I wonder if I just eliminate a couple of things and commit to it for 30 days, 60 days, if I could see some differences and increase their quality of life as a result of it.
I mean, it's all normalized now, right? It's common. You go to the doctor. Migraines are common. Take these meds. ADHD is common. Take these meds. This constipation here, take these meds. This is all normal. So we all leave the doctor. And I'm I was that person. I was not always this educated on this topic. And we leave with this sense of, oh, this is normal. And that's the problem. The problem is this belief system that's been created in our modern world that all of this is normal. And if all of it's normal, then why would we look to change it? Like, why would we actually look and see what's causing it? Because it's fine. It's just normal. Not fucking normal. Heavy periods are not normal. Painful periods, PMDD is not normal. Hormone dysfunction is not normal. And migraines all the time are not normal. Eczema is rampant. Like, my inbox is full of moms with kids with eczema. It is a gut issue. It is a toxins issue. There is ways to resolve it. And doctors won't tell you that. Doctors will just be like, they're not trained. That's not what they do. They go to medical school and they're told, here's a problem. Here's the prescription. That is their education. That our medical schools have been funded for, 100 years through pharmaceutical companies. Their job is to match an ailment to a prescription. And I'm not saying there's not a time and place for that. I take thyroid medication. Thank God we have modern medicine. But look how fucking sick we all are. And most of it can get traced back to a root cause. What are you eating? What are you drinking? What products are you putting on your skin? What do you have in your house? And when you start like going through and just making those small changes, big reward.
Here's the thing. I waited way too long to get a red light therapy device, and I don't want you to make the same mistake. It's been a total game changer for me. A few years back, I had never really even considered or knew what red light therapy was, but I was doing everything I could to heal from Hashimoto's, and I found some interesting studies showing how red light therapy could help improve thyroid antibodies, and that really piqued my interest. But what sealed the deal for me was the research also showing that it could do so much more, like smoothing skin, reducing signs of aging, decreasing inflammation, improving digestion, and even increasing collagen production. So after diving into the research, I finally took the plunge and I got myself a Lumbox. And let me tell you why I chose Lumbox out of all the options out there. First off, the quality is top notch. This little thing is powerful. Its luminosity is higher than any other handheld device that I have seen on the market. And it's portable, battery operated, and it's versatile. I can use it anywhere, anytime, anywhere on my body. Whether I'm targeting my thyroid, improving my gut health, or just giving my skin a boost, Lumbox does it all. Plus, it's zero EMF and it goes through rigorous third-party quality control, so I know I'm using something safe and effective. So if you're ready to take your thyroid health, your skincare, or just your overall wellness to the next level, you need a red light therapy device. Lumbox is the one that I trust, and it's the only one you'll need. And because I want you to experience these benefits too, I've teamed up with Lumbox to offer you an incredible $260 off. That is a 40% off reduction from the regular price. Just head to the link in the show notes to grab yours. Trust me, this is one wellness tool you don't want to miss out.
And I think this is where you and I start to overlap because we're both so different in where, at least where what our online personas are, but you're fighting against these drugs to cover up issues and I'm fighting for plant medicine and plant magic, baby. So switching gears a little bit, we've talked all about you being this super fancy attorney and being so smart and getting so many really good grades in law school. But I can't help but think, what is such a smart attorney doing affiliating herself with an MLM? You must actually be really stupid.
You sound like the messages I get in my inbox all the time. Yeah, you get this a lot. It's so funny. I send people... Do you know who Jenna Kutcher is?
You talk about her all the time.
She's like, when it comes to business, podcasting, and business in general, she's the queen of digital marketing, queen of online presence. She's phenomenal. She's the host of the Goal Digger podcast. And when I decided to build a business, I learned from her. And I loved learning from a blonde cute.
Yeah.
No. Who was a badass entrepreneur that people respected, because I felt I related to her. I was like, I want to be more like you. And so I took a lot of her courses to learn how to create my podcast, to learn how to have a Pinterest account, like all these marketing things that you need to learn how to do if you want to talk on the internet and build a business. She was the person that I looked up to. And I remember listening to a podcast that she did where she said, because she affiliates herself also with network marketing companies, and she gets a lot of crap. And she was like, oh my God, the smartest thing, one of the smartest things anybody can do in their business is have a recurring revenue model. And that means finding an affiliate where they pay recurring payments or working in the network marketing model, because it's genius. And there's so much misconception about multi-level marketing. I think way back in the 80s, like the old school Amway, a lot of the tactics and a lot of the recruiting that were happening. This is 2024. That is not a thing anymore. Network marketing is nothing more than the really well-paid affiliate marketing, where you're given the opportunity to train other people to do what you do and lift them up and build them up. And you both benefit. And so it is a smart financial business decision. And I think one of the things people don't talk a lot about is podcasts don't make money. They just don't. Like, unless you have a million downloads, you're not getting all of these sponsorships and these, they pay like 3 cents per download for ad. Like, nobody goes into podcasting thinking, or maybe they think they're going to make money, and then they learn real quick that is not how things go down. And I was spending hours a day. I was working a full-time job, raising 2 kids, and also trying to educate and grow a business. And you can't do that for free. I have to pay for a VA, somebody to edit my podcast. I have to have software. I have so many. I'm like Zapier, Flowdesk. Like, why? I have 5 million software subscriptions just to run my business. And someone's got to pay that. And so I knew early on I needed to work with a company because I needed an income to fund my advocacy. And it had to be a company that I believed in. It had to be one that had a mission that I aligned with. And I've been with Young Living almost 10 years now. And I still, to this day, if I were to start from scratch, it would be them all day long, all the time, even with all the companies that have come out recently. And there are some amazing clean companies that are coming out, and I'm such a huge supporter of all of them. I work with a lot of them, but Young Living, different. They're different in a million good and amazing ways. And I feel attached to their mission. But yeah, people ask me that all the time. I'm like, it's literally the smartest business decision I ever made.
Can you tell us the story of what made you fall in love with Young Living and see their mission in how they are stewards of the earth and actually care about their consumers?
Yeah. When I very first got into essential oils, I was coming back from Europe. And in Europe, there's a lot of essential oils that are regulated and they're considered drugs. Just like in Canada and in Australia, they see the plant medicine. They see the menthol that comes from peppermint. You can synthesize that menthol and sell it as an over-the-counter, quote-unquote, drug in America. But you can't put that label on peppermint, even though that menthol is literally where it came from. And so we're just really screwed up in that way. And we don't act like other countries. And so when I came back here, I needed essential oils. And I looked around at all these companies, and I'm like, where are you getting your oils from? Like, where are you getting them from? There's so many things that can go wrong. You can grow a plant, and it can be full of pesticides and heavy metals and devoid of any nutrients. You can distill it in water that's contaminated. So now you're condensing essential oil, huge amounts of plants that have a lot of contamination, and you're condensing it into this tiny little bottle that you're going to diffuse in the air in your home. That's dumb. So they can be contaminated there. They can use solvents in the distillation process. They can store it in plastic. So I've seen videos of companies distilling out in fields in plastic bottles. Makes me want to throw up. So you're getting all of those phthalates and BPA probably and all of that garbage in there. And then a lot of these companies are fractionally distilling. So they over distill to make them smell sweeter, because that's what people want. And then a lot of them are adding a bunch of synthetics into it and fillers and other things and selling them. There's no regulation. There's zero. None. Everything that I just said, people who are out there buying essential oils, that's probably what they're getting. If you're looking for cheap oils on Amazon or grocery stores or whatever, like that's what you're getting. And so I started making phone calls. I called every essential oil company and I had my list question. And nobody wanted to answer them, or I got the fluff answers, which I don't appreciate and doesn't sit well with me. And when I called Young Living, they were like, finally, at the end of the conversation, they're like, you could just come to our farm. We'll just show you everything. And I was like, really? Yeah. And so I did. That year, I went to Mona and I, in Utah, they have a lavender farm. And in the lab, there was a scientist there doing like explaining like all the different tests they do at the farm. So once it comes out of the ground at the farm, they don't send it off right away. They like it there at the farm and it's immediate. And I was like, can I record this conversation? I need to go find that conversation. And the guy was like, yes, of course. Oh my God, mind blown. I was like, not only, like, it was the transparency. It really was. And so I did Young Living for 8 years. I sold Young Living. I did all the things, but I wasn't part of the movement. I was just like, this is the cleanest, most transparent company you can buy your product from. And that's where it ended. And then a couple years ago, I went to Winter Harvest in Northern Idaho with CEO of the company, one of the time vice presidents, and the farm manager, the guy who oversees, and he's part of the family who runs Young Living, who owns Young Living. He's the nephew. He and I spent hours in the snow in Idaho distilling red cedar and talking about regenerative agriculture and soil science and worms. And it was really that moment that I realized I've always loved them, but there's a mission here that I'm so passionate about. I want to help. I want to, right? I fix everything. I want to fix it. I want the world to know that the way we care for the earth and our planet matters. And you can be a part. You can be a part of this. You can be a part of this mission to heal our planet and heal our air and heal our water and heal our soil just by buying a living product. And yeah, that was like 2.5 years ago, I think. And now I never shut up about it, like ever.
So there is also, I wasn't around for this, but there was a big to-do with the fact that Young Living was using rosewood, which was an endangered species, and they were actively endangering it, I think. I don't know the actual story, by putting it in their oils, and they got in trouble with the government. How can you support a company like that?
Yeah, that was 10 years ago. That was actually my very beginning journey with Young Living. And from a legal perspective, I told people, I was like, you are all crazy. If you knew the backstory, you would be like buying all the Young Living products. So I came into, and this goes to their transparency too, because I did talk to Young Living when this was happening and they were fully transparent with me. So rosewood, while endangered, each individual country had permitting processes. If you are sustainably taking a certain amount of rosewood, you could permit it through the government. There's all these reforestation projects going on. And rosewood is endangered because of the furniture industry. People wanted furniture. It exploded. Rosewood furniture exploded. And that's why rosewood became endangered. So close to the time that they put it on the list, the U.S. government passed a new law called the Lacey Act, which basically put in all of these conditions for anybody importing rosewood from other countries. You had to jump through all of these hoops. You had to get all of these permits. You had to prove it was coming from a sustainable source. And Young Living had all that in place. They had a process. They had permits. They started to get a little concerned that there was a contractor employee in back where we were getting our rosewood that was falsifying records. And so they did an internal investigation and they couldn't prove it, but they were pretty sure that's what was happening. And let me just tell you what happens in the real world, when companies come across this, they make two decisions. They turn a blind eye and hope they don't get caught and get as much out of it as they can. if they're dumb. But mostly they just cut ties. And they're like, ooh, that's bad news. We don't want to be involved in that. And so they cut ties, they find a new supplier, and they move on. And no one ever knows. Happens all the time. Young Living, who loves the earth, like when you go to their corporate office, you're not talking about science. You better be prepared to be talking about the planet and the earth and Mother Nature. You just got to be ready for that. They went and turned themselves in and went to the attorney general and said, we have a problem. Will you help us? We think this is happening. Can you help us investigate? Can you help us catch this person? And I know some of the internal people that were involved in that because the environmental legal world is a very small world. And like companies don't just turn themselves in. And I don't know this for sure, but I'm sure the conversation went like this. The attorney general was like, you do realize you will be held liable for this. This is a violation of a federal law, the Lacey Act. And Young Living, yeah, we don't care. Can you help us catch this person? They literally turned themselves in and couldn't have cared less that they were going to be held liable. So there was a 2-year-long investigation. And sure enough, they found that this was actually happening. There was a violation. They caught the person. It was actually like a couple people, and they found a couple things with the permitting and falsifying of records, and were able to work with the Attorney General's office to create a process within Young Living to ensure that this could never be falsified again. And the Attorney General, they got fined. There was all of these things, and it hit the newspaper, and everyone was like, Young Living found in violation of the Lacey Act. And it's interesting, if you read the statement, the Attorney General commends Young Living's actions. And that never happens, by the way. Like in a court of law, that is not a thing. I couldn't believe that the lawyer on the case literally was like, they came forward. They supported this investigation. They took full responsibility. We commend their actions. And for me as a lawyer on the inside, that's the company I want to work for. That's the company I want to support. Because what you didn't hear in the news was all the companies that did the wrong thing. I want to work for the company that did the right thing. And I don't think people realize, like, that side of the story is never told. And I'm really passionate about telling that side of the story. So
they didn't, instead of just cutting ties and being done with it, they cared more about saving the rosewood. I'm just caught with, they didn't care that how they were going to be perceived. They wanted to catch this person because they were concerned about the rosewood. Because if they had just said, we're done with you, then the poor rosewood would have continued to be exploited.
Yeah, they would have found another company to sell it to and continue.
Yeah. Beautiful. We love the transparency. We love the stewardship of Mother Nature. Back to Idaho. Idaho was another pivotal moment for you. Because that's when you decided to start your social media.
Yeah. Yep.
Can you tell me about just your experience on social media, your persona, your mission, and how this community has grown and how it serves you?
Yeah, it's been wild. So 2.5 years ago, I had, 2,000 followers, and they were all like friends. I mean, are people I knew in real life, people I'd met in real life. My Instagram was nothing but pictures of my kids on the beach. We lived on the beach in California at the time. That was it. Instagram was just my personal photo album. And when I left Idaho, I was like, I'm done playing small. I'm done. And right at that time, too, was when the Safe Cosmetics Act was passed in California that I had worked so hard lobbying for. And I was exhausted. And I had already had in my head that I can't keep lobbying and having such small returns. What I really need to do is get in front of families. What I really need to do is educate families, because the amount of energy that fills my cup when I change a family's life that's personal that I know is a lot. It fills me up. Lobbying drains me. Right? The return on that investment is hard for me energetically and emotionally. And so I already had that in my head. But by the time I left Idaho, I was so passionate that I was like, you know what? I'm going to start showing up on social media and I'm going to start talking about this. And I'm going to start sharing my experience and my education and my knowledge with people in a way that allows me to take my gift, which is my gift has always been taking really complicated things and making it really simple. And so that's what I started doing. I started taking these really complicated topics and I started teaching it in a really simple way and committed to turning my Instagram into a place where people could come and learn. And I had no idea it was going to blow up. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no training. I had no marketing. I had nothing. I just knew I wanted to grow and share. I knew I wanted to start a podcast because social media, you have 90 seconds. That's it. And these topics like need more time and also more nuance. The black and white world, it's not like this is bad or this is good. Really, the answer is this is the risk. There's so much nuance in gray. And I wanted a platform to talk about the gray. And so I wanted to start the podcast. And so, yeah, I think it was all fueled by passion. Like all of it, the podcast, my Instagram, and as the community grew, I felt that feedback loop. And I think I just need that. I think it's really hard to fight for something all the time and not have any feedback. And not get that positive return on that emotional and energetic investment. And I get that return on social media in the form of messages from families like, you changed my life. I bought an air filter. I bought a water filter. Like those small wins to me mean so much to me. And that it keeps me going.
This is giving you the energetic return to keep going. What do you see in the future of this toxin-free movement? Do you see any hope? Is there any hope that we can cling on to?
I think the hope is in us.
Okay.
Nobody's coming to save us. The Modernization of Cosmetics Act passed last year. It was the largest change in federal law for the regulation of cosmetics that we've ever seen in this country. And it fell very short. It was a huge disappointment. And I know everyone's out there celebrating like small wins matter. That's just fucking exhausting. Like people spent a decade of their life on that legislation and some good things came out of it, but nothing that I'm like, oh, we're all protected now. There's none of that happening. And so my hope is in us. Like the clean living space is growing like wildfire. People are demanding safer products. Moms are saying all these health issues my kids have are not normal. They're asking questions. They're no longer being compliant in their doctor's offices. The hope is in us. And because of that, I feel very.
5 fun questions. Very stressful moments from law school that you came through on the other end.
The whole thing? It's not directly from law school, but I took the bar exam when my son was 6 weeks old. And he was a C-section. We struggled with nursing. I ended up having to pump exclusively. He cried all night long. I ended up, my very first decision to go against my doctor, very first one ever in the history of my life where I was like, I don't agree with this, is I let my son sleep on his stomach. And if I put him on his stomach, he slept so soundly and so peacefully. And the minute I flipped him on his back, freaking screamed all night long. And the doctors were like, give him this medicine and that medicine and Zantac, which we now know is fucking awful. And that was my first kind of decision as a mom where I was like, no, I know best. I know my child best. And at the time I was staying with my mother, who was supposed to be helping me while I studied for the bar. And at 4 weeks old, my mom and my husband and my aunt had an intervention. They were like, you have to take the bar exam in 2 weeks. And you literally haven't left this house and gone. There was this coffee shop around the corner where I was supposed to be studying for like 6 hours a day. And I wasn't going because I was so sleep deprived because I had a baby who cried all night long. And I had a lot of help, thank God, but it was just not. And so they literally were like, we're going to kick you out of the house. They would make me leave. And then I'd come back and pump. And then I would go back. And so I crammed for the bar in 2 weeks with a newborn. And I passed. So there you go.
How many times did you have to take the bar to pass?
Just one.
I just wanted you to brag about yourself. Cramped for 2 weeks past the first time. Would you be willing to just share a little bit about the spiritual gifts that run in your family?
Yeah. I will share a story. I have always felt deep intuition. Always. I was that kid that knew something bad was going to happen before it happened. And a million times I've had dreams where years later things would happen and it would be deja vu. And I'm like, oh, I dreamed this years ago. I always had that. But I was having a conversation with my mom one day. Hopefully she's okay with me telling this. The house that I grew up in as a child growing up, there was always visitors at night. Always. There was like, and for a while I thought I was dreaming, but then I realized I was awake and there would be like people hanging out in the living room, like having a party. And I was like, these are ghosts. These are spirits. These are like, these are not real people. And I would be terrified. And so I would hide under my covers and just want them to go away. And I never told anybody ever. I just thought it was so fucking weird. I'm a weirdo, right? I'm seeing things, whatever. And then as an adult, I was talking to my mom, who was having a conversation with my aunt. And she's like, oh, yeah, do you remember when like these ghosts would come and hang out at our house? And my aunt was like, yeah, I told you to send them over to me. So I looked at my mom and I was like, you saw people too? And it was like this moment where we were like, okay, we both had this same, and it was the exact, like we described what we saw and it was exactly the same. And we had never talked about it. I had never brought it up. I didn't want to be that crazy person. And she's like, oh yeah, there would be like parties. I'm like, oh my God, I'm not crazy. And so yes, both my mom and I, we see people. And at least I did when I was a child. I haven't since. But yeah, the veil is thin is what I'm told.
So. Yeah. Yes. And you still have lingering, just deep intuition from that. Yeah. You don't see people, but you feel energy stronger.
100%.
What impression do you think that you give an Uber driver?
I'm that person that gets in and I'm like, can we unplug all artificial fragrances in this car and roll down all of the windows, please? I'm the girl. I'm probably real fucking annoying.
Oh, incredible. Okay. Favorite type of soup?
Oh, chicken noodle.
Really?
Chicken. Yep. I make a mean homemade chicken noodle. We've got to be with chicken bone broth, though.
Of course.
Yeah, so good.
And what, bonfires or fireplaces?
Ooh, I'm going to say, so for most of my life, I was a bonfire girl. Now that I live in the woods in Virginia and I have my own wood burning fireplace, I'm all fire.
Love.
The beach anymore. Bonfires are for the beach.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. And that's beautiful when it's snowing and when it's cold outside and you can just stay inside and control the weather, control the temperature.
100%.
Okay, tell everybody where they can find you, pimp yourself out. What offerings do you have? How can we glean information from you?
So much. Find me on Instagram, Wendy_toxinfreeish. I am the host of the Toxin Free-ish podcast. I have more freebies to teach people how to read labels. I have courses, programs, Toxin Free and 3 if you want to work with me. It's all on my Instagram. It's all on my website, www.toxinfreeish.com. And the biggest thing that I have that I want people to utilize is my toxin-free shopping guide. I work with brands. I read ingredients. I deep dive into sourcing. And I have a categorized list of products, discount codes. If you go to my website, toxinfreeshoppingguide.com, you can find skincare, hair care, baby care, men's care, all the things organized by category, and everything that's on that guide is completely clean and Wendy approved. I want to make it as easy as possible.
Thank you so much for sitting with me. I'm glad this finally happened. It was delightful. I hope you had fun with me.
Sure.
A little bit more of a relaxed setting. I love your face too. I will be seeing you soon and I'm really excited about it.